They tuck it away and run for it inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit. There'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
Welcome to another edition of the Roar of the Lions UK podcast, episode 238. Gonna make you sweat. My name is Matthew Turner, alongside Ashley Soden. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. Hoping that this week will go a bit different, a bit better than about a couple of weeks ago when we last played the Bears, and it wasn't perhaps the best game of football from some of our players. Not pointing any fingers, but Goff. But We've played them once now. We know how they play. They've seen how we play. Now it's time to make those big, massive adjustments that we kind of need. And I think we can.
We are going to be joined by our friends Ryan and Brendan from the Bear Down Chicago podcast in about 40 minutes' time. We're going to go through the news. We're going to go through the stats. And then hopefully we're going to have them on to give expert analysis on our foes this Sunday at Soldier Field. So let's get on with this. Our Discord channel is a fantastic place to be all the way through the week, especially on game day, but also just to talk about Colt Football Manager players from years gone by. If you've not seen chat this week, it was really good fun. But college football, all sport, off topic, fantasy football, gambling, draft, anything you like, really. It's a fun place to be. So if you're not on there already, we'd love to see you there. Link is in the chat right now. Come and join us. College Football Podcast happened yesterday, actually. I was going to say coming up, but it's not coming up. The boys talked about Championship Week last week, looked at the college football playoffs, and look ahead to the upcoming bowl season. So have a look and see what the guys have done. Don't forget to like the show, sub to the podcast, all that good stuff, and add our friends at Lions Nation Unite on their Facebook groups, Home and More's project to bring the best in Lions content creators together. We are YouTube monetized, Twitch affiliated. We've got a tip jar in the YouTube description too, so if you're enjoying what you're listening to and want to show some love that way, we would absolutely love that, but absolutely no need. And there's a feedback form down below as well. If you want to give us any hints and tips or thoughts about content you'd like to see come in, or ways that we can improve the show, we'd love to hear from you. Just click the link and get in touch. And finally, our merch store is live, and it means that you can get your loved ones something fantastic for Christmas. The link is in YouTube and Twitch right now as well. It's also our pinned tweet if you don't watch live and you're on the podcast feed. Right, so let's crack on with some news. And there's been a lot of roster comings and goings this week for the first time in what feels like a long time. Firstly, a signing to the 53-man roster. Kendall Vildor, the veteran cornerback, has been signed from our practice squad to the active roster. And apparently this is because the Titans tried to re-sign him to their 53, Ash.
Yeah, it's similar to obviously the Nebraska situation a couple of weeks ago, where I suppose someone tried to sign him. Probably a bit of an upgrade, because at least as we said, Vildor's been there, done that. He's a veteran guy. He was drafted and played for a certain team that we'll be discussing in a while. So little like preview of maybe one of the questions we're going to ask. But at the same time, the corner room, especially with how it's been playing the past couple of weeks and all the rumblings about stuff needing to be changed, having another veteran presence there, so if, God forbid, anything happens to Jerry O'Cam, means we don't have to turn to the least favourite man in our roster in Will Harris. At least you've sort of got, everyone's got a bit of a buffer now, because Fielder's can come in, he's been there, done that, he knows how to play the kind of scheme we do. Like today, yesterday, Glenn was discussing him, saying, he's been there, done that, he knows everything, we can trust him. Probably a preview of what happened today, where we signed him to the 53-man, we signed him to 53, so I'm happy with the move. Said a couple of weeks ago, we signed him and Schofield. Kind of savvy veteran moves, trying to make sure we've got that experience and consistency of the playoffs, and we're heading that crunch time now in December, but playing meaningful games. Who would have thought we could be saying that 3 years ago?
Yeah, it does feel like a world away. Vildor's 5'11", 189 pounds. He's played 44 games for the Bears, 2 for the Titans last season. So some experience, a bit shorter than the corner that you would like to see, but you know, his best season was in 2021. He had a sack, 46 tackles, 4 passes defended, started 12 games for the Bears that season. So he's not the most experienced, but he's not had none either. And considering our backup corners are all basically UDFAs and people of that nature, he adds to that room for sure. Campbell said he may play Sunday. We shall see. I'm kind of expecting him to be inactive because, you know, maybe we'll assign him to the 53 already if we really believed in him that hard, but we'll see. We'll see. Also, we've made a couple of signings to the practice squad. Ash, defensive lineman Tyson Alualu and offensive lineman Matt Farniok.
Yep, so Alualu is the big sign, in my opinion. Obviously, everyone knows. As we'll come on to in a minute, why we signed him, but again, Sevi veteran guy, can play across both DT spots. I see him probably more as a bit of a free tech, despite his playing experience with Steelers, where he was more of a one tech nose tackle type. Obviously, they went to the Jags and played a bit more of that sort of attacking, like 3-4 technique defensive end. Just get really good signing. I really like it. Like, obviously, in the preview on review on Monday, it was a bit like there's no one really on free agency. Brad Holmes is enough. Someone I didn't even realize he was a free agent. That's someone who's been there, done that, played a lot of games. Dipping in his career, had his height probably about 2018, 2019. Off the top of my head, we had like 4 sacks and a good couple of tackle for losses. But it's a good guy. He can stabilize the DT room for a couple of weeks while we wait for our big guy to get back. And then Farinok, this was someone who in the preseason was the camp favorite to be the Cowboys' left guard. And we all know that the Cowboys are known for having really good offensive line. This is a guy who, if you listen to the Detroit Lions breakdown with Joe and Eric, despite my slight egregiousness with their analysis at the end of the program about a certain playoff committee and decisions at the end of that, very good premium. Farinok played right tackle at Nebraska, and then since he's come into the league, he's played every other spot. This is a 5-position backup. This is kind of what we hope Sawstall could maybe turn out to be, but it's that consistent, again, consistency. You know what you're getting from him, where if something happens to Sawstall, Jonah, you've now got a veteran guy you can plug in and perhaps give you a bit more stability than Arashika could.
Yeah, he's so apparently his name is said, according to Pro Football Reference, Farniak rather than Farniok. So I got that wrong. Apologies to Matt. He has played a total 213 snaps on offense in his career. 190 came in 2022. That was 43% of the available snaps in his 7-game stretch with them. So he's not the most experienced person you've ever seen, but like you say, Ash, 5-position flexibility. Not unlike Sawstall, potentially, but another body in the room. We needed another body in the room. So I'm glad to see it. And Alualu, we'll come on to it now, but yeah, much needed signing, someone with a lot of experience and maybe not just a ring chaser, but we'll see. Released from the practice squad is linebacker Raymond Johnson, who I will leave without comment because I really don't know anything about him. But the
I was going to say he's a pass rusher. Had really balled out for the Bengals in preseason, had like 8 pressures, 2 sacks on limited snaps, like 90 grades. But in defense and pass rush wasn't so good at tackling and run defense, and that's something you need to be good on this team. So that's why he's been under the practice squad since week one. When we set the practice squad, been there, but obviously the team never likes him enough to bring him up when we've had problems in the pass rush room. So hopefully he goes and finds a home somewhere, but it's not going to be here probably.
The defensive tackle, Ali McNeil, finds himself on IR. He is shut down for 4 games, which is a real shame for the Lions. Obviously, he got injured in the previous game, actually came back into the game before coming back out of the game. Expected to return to the active roster in time for the playoffs with a knee sprain was the initial thing that was reported. But then today, he has said to reporters he expects to be back at the earliest possible opportunity. That would be week 18 against the Minnesota Vikings, which potentially, at the time of recording, could be for the division. We hope it isn't, but it could be. So fingers crossed for that. The key game, of course, for the Lions is winning against the Vikings in week 16, because that removes a game that they can win then. And of course, the only problem is the Packers. But Let's see what happens with that. There have been false dawns in this division before. Final bit of news is the defensive end, Bruce Irvin, has been fined $7,000 for his hit on the quarterback, Derek Carr, coming just a few weeks after Amara's 40 grand plus fine. Ash, seems egregiously different to me, given the part of Amara's fine, which was, what else can he do compared to Bruce Irving's, just try anything else other than what you did.
Exactly. Well, I think, unfortunately, part of it comes from just the difference in wages they get. Sam and Ra, I know he's on a, obviously had a rookie contract and that, but he's probably earning a bit more than Irvin. And obviously the league is trying to stop this whole, like, leading with the head thing. So he's been made an example of. He's a big name. They've made something out of basically nothing. Like, I've seen that video that supposes the player's done it on a million times and you can see basically nothing. So it's just a league making example. But yeah, Bruce Irving getting 7K. That's not too bad. And to look at it from the other side, Derek Carr, he was a full participant in practice today and is questionable for the game despite obviously being in concussion protocol still, having the shoulder injury and the rib injury he got on that play. So maybe it's also the league being like, well, he wasn't too badly hurt. So let's not piss the Lions fans off a bit more. Let's make it reasonable-ish fine. And then if he does it again, then we whack him with the big boy fine that's like a whole game chair.
I will say right now, by the way, that Amon-Ra's salary is still less than the veteran minimum.
Is it?
So, $1.1 million cap number. $940,000 is base salary. Obviously, he's had his $800,000 prorated bonus already when he signed his deal. So, he got $940,000 for this year. And Irvin is a 16-year vet or whatever. No, 14-year vet or whatever he is. He'll be on a per-game basis far more than that. And I say far more as in maybe 30% more, but even then we're talking about a couple of hundred grand, and obviously he's only been with us for a few games, whereas Amara's had a whole season. So Amara will make more than him in the year, but not on a per game basis. But that's not important. Let's crack on with talking about, actually briefly on Alim. I mean, we talked about why Aluelu came on, obviously that's his why, but in a position where we've already been struggling for push up front, this is a hammer blow for the team.
Exactly, like, you know, they don't trust some of the players we have in the 53 because they've been consistently inactive while we've been bringing up Bahana. Like, and I hate to single out two of the players. I definitely want to single out one of the players, Isaiah Bugs. This is your time now. You've been moaning on Twitter, and every single time you've been inactive, you've been tweeting, here's your time to fucking step up and put on your big boy boots. So you did it last year. Now's your chance to do it this year because, honestly, the fan base is slowly falling out of love with you. You came in last year as a bit unheralded, even on this podcast. I know when it happened, and Oz obviously held up his hands about this and said he was wrong. He came in with that massive missed tackle rate, and just singing him out because he's the one obviously I know the most out of this. It was nice to say no, missed tackle rate, not good. Came out, balled out, did his veteran thing as well with the defensive team meeting last season that led to the turnaround, or part of it at least. And in the offseason, he doesn't put the work in, he comes into camp late with an overweight. So the team bench him as an example. Like, you have to put your work in here. That's how we are. He's upset with it. He then obviously gets the illness and that. And he keeps tweeting. The fan base is slowly falling out of him. And now here's his time to say, right, I need to step up now. Because if he doesn't, he's gone. He will be gone. Because when Alim comes back, we're gonna have to cut someone to make room for him. And for me, it's going to be Bugs. Because obviously we've got Levi still on the roster, who we drafted a couple of years ago in the second round. He also needs to step up. You're a second rounder for a reason. It's time to see those pass rushing chops that you had in college. We need to see him now because we don't really have an interior pass rusher unless we slide someone inside from edge room, which is not what we're going to do when the edge room isn't even being consistent from the edges itself anyway. And then I want to see a bit more of Broderick. We traded up for him for a reason. Even if it is, you just stick him on like a second and two or something where you know they're going to probably be running the ball up the middle. You stick him on them just to get him the snaps because you've traded up for a reason. You need to, it might be time to sort of, because we need something in that D tackle room, it might be time to sort of, or not baptism of fire with him, but almost just like, right, here's your chance. You're going to get 15 snaps a game. Show us why we traded up for you. We just need someone to step up right now because Alim was a big part of that defensive line, obviously. Hutch is the clear superstar of it, but Alim was really having his breakout year this year that we were all hoping for. we just need someone like that.
Yeah, I just see it being anyone else other than Bugs. I just think he's done. I don't really understand why we haven't cut him yet. I know it's going to cost us money to do so, but then we can replace him with someone who's actually going to contribute on the roster. I got nothing but love for Bugs Bunny. He did terrific for us last season. But if he's not pulling his weight this year, that's fine. We thank you for your service, and we'll bring on someone who is going to contribute this year. This, for me, is Levi's time. We've seen no grumblings or anything from him. He's lucky to be on the roster. He made it, though, against all the odds in this offseason. And he's had a few snaps here and there, but he's been inactive most weeks. It's still more than we thought he'd get in preseason, where it's like, is he medically going to be able to play again? But he's the right body type for that three-tech position. Bugs isn't. Yeah. And if it's not him, it's Pascal. And I don't think there's anyone else for the role, really. I think that Pascal is a better person for that role than Kamish is. And Broderick, he's still not the right body type for that three-tech role. You're talking about potentially moving to a conventional 4-3 rather than playing the 4-3 under that we favour. So it's going to be a massive schematic change if we go for two big bodies in there with Benito and insert player here, who's a big 300-pound-plus guy. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. That will be the decision of the game as to who plays in that role. But let's crack on and talk about the Bears in some more detail before our esteemed guests come on. They are 4-8. Their expected win total is 4.6. They're slightly under expectation right now. They have losses for their first four games against Green Bay, Tampa, Kansas City, and Denver. They got their first win at Washington, got a loss versus Minnesota, but then beat Vegas, lost to the Chargers, the Saints, but then beat Carolina, lost to us somehow. And then they beat Minnesota last week. So they're splitting that matchup this season. Lions come into this game favorites, 17 to 10 on. That's about plus 180. Bears are 6-4. That's minus 180. Bears are 6-4. That's about plus 160. Lions equate, therefore, to minus 3 on the spread. And the over-under is 43 points. On the injury report, Hendon Hooker and Frank Ragnow are ruled out of this game. Frank has been much, you know, rumoured that that would be the case. Obviously, his injury last week did not look good. The fact that they haven't put him on IR is the most promising thing I've seen for our playoff run, because I've been really fearful that that would have been a bit more serious. Malcolm Rodriguez is questionable, but the big news on the Lions side of it, Ash, is that Alex Anzalone has no designation. He is good to go.
Yep. It's going to be one of those games where you pop it back in and get back into the play, to quote the famous article a couple of days ago where he explained what happened. So he had a broken thumb in the game and then has a daughter. That's a hell of a week to go from, as you say, having a surgery, having a screw put in there to hold it in place, to stabilize it. So then at the end of the week, I'll be holding your newborn daughter. Now is his chance to make it a great fortnight by coming back and leading this defense to an absolute routing against Justin Fields. I'm hoping sack and a half off blitzes and a couple of tackle for losses. That'll be a good game for Anzalone, in my opinion. It's really just throwing back into the fire. You're the sort of veteran leader in that linebacker room. Show us what we were missing last week, because let's be honest, Barnes, Campbell, Rodrigo, Jalen Reeves-Maybin, they played pretty good in his stead. So it's time for him to sort of say, okay, I see what you guys are doing. It's time for me to raise my game myself now.
Mm-hmm. On the Bears side of it, they had a few people on the report, but only actually a few people with a designation. Larry Borum, the guard, Donta Foreman, the running back, Noah Sewell, the linebacker, and Tyreek Stevenson, the cornerback, were all at some point, well, they had a designation, but they were all full practice all week, and they all are playing this week. Actually, Noah, sorry, was limited in Wednesday, but everyone else full practice all the way through. Yannick Ngakoue was limited with a knee on Thursday. Full practice yesterday is questionable, but I mean, if he's full practice today, he'll probably go. Velus Jones has an illness today. He is therefore questionable. Only flared up today, so we'll see what happens with that. And Tyler Scott, so both wide receivers in that sort of wide receiver 3, 4, 5 sort of roles. Tyler Scott has a hamstring problem. He was limited today and questionable. So a couple of people there. And another wide receiver in Equanimeous St. Brown with a pectoral injury. That flared up on Thursday. He is out, Ash. So quite a few depth wide receivers that are possibly out. And Gakwe, he's not had a good season. But that would be a miss for them in the pass rush department.
It really would be. And obviously, I'm going to get the sort of digs out now by saying Equanimeous decided to have an injury just so he didn't have to get shown up by his brother again, not to give him ammunition for next week's podcast, because that's actually been one of my favorite discoveries this season. Well, I'm not doing it this season, but I've actually started really listening to it this season. There's been some good stuff. I'm totally not just saying that because their opinions on the certain decision last week, because every podcast has been coming out saying that. Even the Kelce brothers today, they released a clip discussing it. But yeah, get off that. Wide receiver room being injured for us is such good news, because Fields isn't a, well, he actually did show some good passing against us last a couple of weeks ago. So for him to have depleted so like wide receiver room makes it easier for us. We can focus more on stopping DJ Moore now, stopping Cole Kmet, because let's be honest, with their scheme, that's all the only two they really look at. Like Darnell Mooney's gone from being the next coming of the Golden Tate and Bears fans' eyes to not really existing. Like, it's so sad. Even though I know Brian Branch in an interview this week said that Darnell Mooney is one of the hardest receivers he's had to guard this year. He was so hard to guard that Darnell Mooney didn't even get targeted once.
I'm gonna come
As soon as
on.
I say, I was scared then, I saw Bears Twitter is trending. I'm like, oh my God, am I ripping the Bears and they're coming? But no, instead, it's is it, oh by God, is it that music? It's Steve Collins.
How you doing, Steve? Is he there? Come in, Steve. He's not
Steve,
listening.
this is
He's not
Houston
here.
calling.
Oh, maybe. He's saying 1 minute. Right. We'll
1 minute,
come on to
please.
Steve in just a second, and we're going to talk about the Bears depth chart very quickly. So, quarterback one is obviously Justin Fields. What an enigma he continues to be. Quarterback two is from what one chart described that I saw this week as the best quarterback in the NFL. Tyson Bagent is QB2. Ash, if you didn't see it, it's that he is the best quarterback in the NFL when throwing into tight windows. When there is no separation, he has the highest completion rate or EPA per drop back or something like that. So
I wonder why that
that
is.
was fun. Running backs, they have the four-pronged attack, which every one of them should be taken seriously in a good running attack, especially with Justin Fields back there. And Khalil Herbert, Donta Foreman, Roschon Johnson, Travis Homer, everyone in Detroit remembers what Donta Foreman did to us last year. So do not take him lightly. Wide receivers, DJ Moore, we have spoken about. Darnell Mooney, we have spoken about. Equanimeous and Brown is out. Tyler Scott and Velus Jones Jr., questionable. Trent Taylor. And then Joe Reed is the only player on IR for the Bears. Tight ends are Cole Kmet, who's having a career year, Robert Bob Tonyan, and Mercedes Lewis. Yes, he's still here. Front five for them from left to right: Braxton Jones, Tevin Jenkins, Lucas Patrick, Nate Davis, and Darnell Wright, backed up by Larry Borum, Cody Whitehair, Dan Feeney, and Ja'Tyre Carter. On defense, Yannick Ngakoue, if he can go as a left end in a base 4-3. Andrew Billings, Justin Jones, and Montez Sweat, backed up by rookies in Zach Pickens and Gervin Dexter, who's having a great year, and DeMarcus Walker, who continues to rack up some sacks. The three linebackers are TJ Edwards, Tremaine Edmonds, and Jack Sanborn, backed up by Dylan Cole and Noah Sewell. And then the back four are Jalen Johnson, Kyler Gordon, Jaquan Brisker, and Eddie Jackson, but backed up by the rookie Tyrique Stevenson, who had himself a day against the Lions just 2 weeks ago.
Right.
2 weeks ago? Yeah. And otherwise, they've got Terrell Smith, who's fine, and Jalen Jones, Quindell Johnson, and Elijah Hicks, and Josh Blackwell. The kicker is Kyro Santos. Was one of the better kickers in the NFL, was having an up and down year. The punter, Trenton Gill. The long snapper is Patrick Scales. And just after having said all of that, Steve is here. How are you doing?
What were all those names you were reading out? I'd not heard of any of them.
It's a good thing they're not here yet.
We're just trying to get out of our system now.
I mean, there's very few names on that list on either side of the ball that we should be that scared of.
Yeah.
I like the bullishness. I'm not sure I agree.
I have to say, Montez Sweat seems to be a good addition. I know he's had some terrible PFF grades, but like in terms of what I've seen, he's certainly livened them up.
He's passing the eye test, I would say, yeah, so far. Yeah. Like, considering he's gone to a new scheme, he doesn't look out of place. And that's a really big, you know, compliment to him as a person, I would say. But I don't agree, Asher, there's no one to write home about on this team. I do think they lack dynamic weapons on offense outside of Fields and Moore. But Donta Foreman has done his thing, and Khalil Herbert has been very productive, and Moore was fantastic against us and has had a great season. Him and Fields have actually got it working. And sometimes you only need one wide receiver, and he can be that guy.
Yeah, like I'm surprised. The guy that I'm actually most worried about on that offense is someone you didn't even mention. It's we got the old problem of defending against tight ends. Cole Kmet is a really damn good tight end, and we know what he can do against us. We've seen it the past couple of years since he's coming to the league. He's always good for at least one touchdown against us. That's the one that scares me, especially with obviously Anzalone. I know he's not on the injury report, but obviously with the broken hand, whatever happened to him. I'm a bit worried about how we can cover him, because they might move him around a tiny bit as the only other offensive weapon they really look at in the passing game other than DJ Moore. They might try and use the fact we're probably going to be focusing on Moore to sort of get him lined up on a linebacker, lined up against Tracy or Kirby, where they can probably get a bit of an advantage. Mets the one that worries me, but yeah, at the same time, the reason I'm not too worried about this is especially the offense and that, it's because they're not good at play calling. As soon as you show that you can stop something once, they just completely abandon it, as Eric White pointed out on the Detroit Lions breakdown. As soon as we loaded the box and stopped the QB runs against Fields a couple of weeks ago, they completely abandoned them. So all we need to do is just probably knock one pass away from Kmet, and they're basically just going to use him to block all day. The offensive play calling is just shite.
Cole Kmet is a top 15 tight end that we made look like a top 5 tight end.
Disagrees strongly. Think he's in that sort of 6 to 8 range. I don't know. Really? I've thought that when he was in Seattle too. Like, you could see the talent there. And I just think he's been fantastic.
Kmet's never been in Seattle.
Not Seattle. Who am I thinking of? Who am I thinking of? Never mind. Anyway, I still think he's been that good. What am I thinking of? Never mind. Don't worry. Don't worry. I still think he's been that good. But yeah. Brent says 8 to 10 range. I can back that. I mean, we were always talking with Hockenson while he was here that he was in that sort of 5-6 range. Is he 4-3? Whatever. Maybe Sam Laporta puts him down a spot because Laporta is better. But
oh, yeah.
But I still
Laporta's
think
a top five tight end, though. Laporta is absolutely a top five tight end. Absolutely. Like, I'm not being a homer. He absolutely is.
he's taken down all the spots in that light lineup.
Yeah. Right. Let's crack on with some of the stats here, because our friends are going to be coming on very shortly. They are the 27th overall team per PFF, 24th on DVOA, 23rd on offense per PFF, 25th. Per DVOA, and 29th on defense per PFF, and 20th on defense per DVOA. So a big difference on the defensive side of how they weigh things. On the offense, play the majority of their snaps in 11 personnel, who doesn't these days. A good amount in 12 and 21 personnel, though. 24% in 12, 10% in 21. Those are higher than average, I think. Otherwise, a smattering of other formations, but nothing to write home about. Justin Fields obviously had some injuries, so his completion rates are a bit down. Not completion rates, his number of throws are down on previous years because he just hasn't been on the field. But he has 143 completions on 222 attempts, a 64% completion rate, 1,587 yards, 12 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, 92 passer rating, 45 QBR. Also 77 rushes for 400 yards, that's 5.2 yards per rush, and one touchdown on the ground. PFF grade 73.8 for him. Leading rushers, Donta Foreman, 92 carries at 381 yards. That's 4.1 yards per carry and 4 touchdowns. Receiving games, nothing to write home about with Donta. 78.9 his overall PFF grade. DJ Moore, 70 receptions on 93 targets, 14.3 yards per catch, 1,003 yards and 6 touchdowns in a great season for him. Grade of 88.1 leads the team. And Cole Kmet, we just mentioned him, 56 catches on 68 throws his way, 8.6 yards per catch, 482 yards and 5 touchdowns this season, and a grade of 72.8. Other good grades in there, Khalil Herbert, the running back, 77.6, and guard Tevin Jenkins, 72.5. Some worse grades in there. The center, Lucas Patrick, 49.6. The backup tackle, Larry Borum, 48. And now backup, Cody Whitehair? He's still backup at the moment.
I think he's backup, yeah.
He's a 43.5. Might be a reason why he's not in the lineup anymore. They are an efficient team on offense when it comes to situational footballs, but they've got to get in the situations in the first place. On third down, they're ninth. On fourth down, they're 14th. And in the red zone, they are 11th. Boys, we've just said maybe this offense is lacking in weapons, but with Kmet having 5 touchdowns on the season and 8.6 yards per catch, and DJ Moore already over 1,000 yards, and a couple of good running backs in there, it speaks to why this team is actually pretty good when it comes down to, you know, can you get your third, fourth downs and in the red zone? They're much better in the red zone than the Lions are, for example.
Yeah. I think for me, there's two kind of prongs to their attack that I'm worried about. And I get Kmet is definitely a threat, but I don't want to see Jerry Jacobs anywhere near DJ Moore, because I know how that pans out. So I think Cam Sutton plus safety help will need to do a job on DJ Moore and take him out of the game. But the biggest thing is Justin Fields, because Aaron Glenn can't deal with mobile quarterbacks, and he has consistently failed to deal with mobile quarterbacks. And when we've played mobile quarterbacks, he's consistently taken till the middle of the third, maybe the fourth quarter, before he's kind of re-schemed the defense. It just seems really slow to respond. And, you know, this is going to be a big test, because, you know, we are going to encounter mobile quarterbacks in the playoffs when we, you know, when we play whoever we play. And certainly if we've got any pretense of getting to a championship game, we're going to have to probably go through Philadelphia. And so if Justin Fields, you know, looks like Michael Vick on Sunday night, then we're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, it's always going to be the Russian. That's why they're so good in the red zone, especially because in those sort of compacted areas, so easy for the defenses to get kind of confused. Then all he has to do is pull one RPO, read it correctly, and he's sprinting off to the corner of the end zone. Like, that's the big thing. And I completely agree, it's going to be a hard for a scheme against it. I know we did it last year, and I keep bringing it up, the sort of 5-2 kind of, like, the 5-1 looks we were doing, where we almost had, like, basically playing a 3-4 sign of scheme, except for instead of having two linebackers, one, we obviously have, like, branch and a nickel kind of thing. We're going to have to do something like that, but just don't. The big thing that helped us last year when we were doing that late in the season is we had a consistent speed guy to help sort of clean up the pressures we were forcing with the contain with Houston. Irvin showed flashes of that last week with his sack. And then obviously his WWE audition tape move that obviously got him fined, but God seems to be okay, as I keep saying. I don't know. It's going to have to come down to one thing. It's something I put in the Discord, obviously, earlier today, that we're one of the best teams when blitzing on early downs and stuff and early in the games. We need to start doing that more. I know it's going to be Anzalone. For some reason, he's just our best blitzer because he has that quick twitch reaction he's able to read. We need to send him on a couple of blitzes. We need to send Barnes on a couple of blitzes. We need to send Campbell on a couple of blitzes. Rodrigo. We've got four guys there who each probably can do it differently, but in theory should be good blitzers. We need to use that against the Bears. Send them all different ways. Send Anzalone from the wheel position, make him sort of fake a drop back into his own, and suddenly send him sprinting down the B gap behind, I don't know, Benito Jones, who's taking up a double team. Send Jack Campbell bearing right down the A gap on a double A gap blitz kind of thing that the Vikings used to do. We need to start getting creative with these blitzes, because that's something that works when we've done it. So we need to start incorporating that a bit more and mixing up the looks of it so teams can't pick up on it, because I think that actually might be a real way for us to get better on defense. Of course, it's all wishful thinking because, as much as we love to say it, there's a reason why Aaron Glenn's getting paid, and obviously I'm not. I'm sat here talking to you guys doing a call center job, which I do love, to be honest, but I'm not getting paid the big bucks. So Aaron Glenn's got to, he's got to show why he's getting paid those big bucks, because I've seen this week what happens when you are a really good defensive coordinator. You get a nice big pay rise. You get a nice big pay rise. You're getting paid millions of dollars after you need a top five scoring defense that wrongly gets ruled out of some stuff afterwards.
And don't forget, Ash, that there's no Aleem McNeil this week. So there's going to be, there isn't going to be the pressure coming up the middle, because if you look at pressure rates after Hutch and Aleem, there's a massive drop off. And so you take Aleem out of that in the middle, and all of a sudden that take, you know, this is what makes me worried.
Yeah, well, me and Matt discussed it earlier, and we completely agree. Like, it's going to have to be, I hate riding it on these guys because they're both former second-round picks who are injured, but it's Levi and Pascal time now. Pascal's been getting this better the past couple of weeks. Let's continue on. And Levi has to show something, because that's what we drafted him for. It was supposed to be him.
Next man and, up.
Exactly. But I just don't know.
Yeah, I'm all aboard the Pascal train as well, actually, on this. I do think that every time I watch him play, I kind of think he's better on the interior than he is on the edge. And I think that actually when he was playing in college, that he played a lot inside. He was
actually mostly an outside linebacker.
Oh, okay.
It's because I get what you say, and I'm bringing up someone I've really talked about like this time last year. It's because he has that same sort of quick twitch first step that Clyde Jacansi has. So I remember when we drafted him, I literally tweeted Eric after it was like, could he potentially put on 10, 15 pounds and play in the interior? And Eric was like, no, you'll lose his first step. But at the same time, you can move him inside. We need to do that a lot more. Have him inside of Hutch or inside of Kamish, just power rushing guys.
Going to come on to the defense in just a second, but we've got Ryan Dengel in the building. From Bear Down Chicago podcast. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing great, man. How about yourself, man? How's life?
Very good. Thank you, Ryan. It's good to get you on. I know that we couldn't get you on 2 weeks ago, but how's things with you?
Man, a life with two children under the age of 2.5 is very different than life before children. I'll just say that, man. So seriously, thank you for the invite. I'm really glad we're able to make this work.
Yeah. Ryan, you've just gone there a little bit, so I don't, you know, the stream is not ideal there. I tell you what we'll do though, I will crack on with the defense and hope that that just works itself out in the next 5 minutes. So the Bears spend the majority of their life in base 4-2-5, otherwise known as nickel. Their actual base formation of 4-3, they actually only spend 24% of the snaps in. 4-2-5 is 70%, and then dime formations of 4-1-6 and 3-2-6 are 5%. There's a smattering of 9 snaps in other formations, including one in 0-3-8, which I appreciate. But otherwise, their defensive statistical leaders, TJ Edwards, is the leader in tackles. He's got 2 interceptions, 3 passes defended, a forced fumble, a fumble recovery, 2 sacks, 127 tackles, 6 tackles for loss, 6 quarterback hits, and a PFF grade of 81.2. Montez Sweat hasn't been there long, but has made his presence felt. A pass defended, 2.5 sacks, 7 tackles, 2 tackles for loss, 6 quarterback hits, PFF grade of almost 70. Jalen Johnson continues to make me look a bit silly with my take of him not being very good, with a PFF grade of 90. 3 interceptions so far this year. And lest we forget the pick 6 against us, 8 passes defended, a forced fumble, 27 tackles, a tackle for a loss. Otherwise, Jaquan Brisker, lots of people from our side of the aisle wanted him in the draft. 1 interception, 5 passes defended, a forced fumble, a sack, 63 tackles, tackle for a loss, 3 quarterback hits, and a PFF grade of only 63 for all that production. Other good grades in there, Terrell Smith, the backup corner, 69.1. Some worse grades in there. Interior defensive lineman Jones with a 50. Elijah Hicks with a 46.6, the strong safety. And Yannick Ngakoue, 40.4, the defensive end. Does he play? Not sure yet. On the actual efficiency metrics, there's the reverse fortunes, I think, compared to the offense, where they are very efficient on defense. Not so much. 30th on third down, 19th on fourth down, dead last in the red zone. Even worse than the Lions on defense in the red zone. How about that? Ryan, I think we got you back.
I hope. Does the connection sound better than before?
Yeah,
it sounded like it did when you first got on, and I'm hoping it doesn't go. And we've also got Brendan coming on as well. How you doing, Brendan?
What's up, guys? Good. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Thank you. Thank you for coming on. How's things with you? What's been happening in Bears?
Things are
in
pretty
Bears
good.
That's okay. We had a couple of problems transatlantic.
I don't know. I mean... I was going to say my Zoom is probably not great right now. I don't usually record off Zoom, but no, things are good. I'm flying high because I won an NFL trivia contest yesterday, so I got a bunch of prizes.
Hey, anything to write home about with the prizes? What's the best thing you got?
Let's see, 55-inch TV with Sunday ticket, and then a Dak Prescott signed football, which doesn't mean anything to me right now.
I mean,
what was the most obscure question that you answered?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think it had to be the final Jeopardy one. No. Okay, there's two of them. It was the final Jeopardy one, which was who was the player that picked off Peyton Manning three times in 2007 in his worst game. And the obvious hint was that he has 14 kids with like multiple women.
Do you know it? I think I'm trying to think. It rings a bell, but
it definitely rings a bell.
Exactly. Even, know from our own quiz on Lions trivia that this happens where I remember it like 5 seconds too late.
Yeah. Ryan, do you know?
Nope.
Oh. Is Antonio Cromartie.
Oh, man.
But there were a few Lions questions, though. There were...
Don't ask me.
No. Some of them were good. Some of them were bad. The obvious one was the... who holds the single-season record for most receiving yards?
Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, it has to be Calvin. Yeah.
Yep, that was it. And then what was one of... Name the four teams that have never been to a Super Bowl.
Yeah. That works.
No, but here's the final, like the tiebreaker question, which is this was like an overtime match. We tied with one team. How many days has it been since the last Patriots win? And you had to be the team that got closest to the last Patriots playoff win. I'm sorry.
Playoff win.
Yeah, it wasn't yesterday.
So Mac Jones year one, they went to the playoffs and they lost. So it's Tom Brady era. So
I'm saying 1,500 days.
It's a pretty good guess.
16.
So it's four years, just less than, isn't it? I would go for 1,315.
All right, Ash said 1,600. What do you got, Dangle?
I can't math, dude. I got two kids at home.
You're a teacher, bro. It was somewhere around like 1,726, and I guessed 1,850 because I knew it was the last one was the Super Bowl. They hadn't won a playoff game since the 2018 Super Bowl. And I'm telling you guys, like, As they read my answer, I'm looking at the other team, and this one girl's just shaking her head like, no, you didn't get it. And I'm just like, oh, yeah, watch this. And then they said their answer. It was like 400 more. And I'm just like, that's right, bitch. I know my shit.
I love it.
But me and my boy, we were fired up, man.
And I mean,
these are the tiny victories that get Chicago Bears fans through life.
Pretty much.
You went there, Steve. If there was going to be a signed ball from a team that you don't care about, Dallas Cowboys, it could make money. Like, that's a good ball.
Yeah. Especially if Dak wins the MVP this year, like, that could be huge.
He's actually probably got the best argument for it as well. Like, all the favorites up there, I'm like, no, why?
So, did they? Do they choke before the playoffs start, or just like in the first round of the playoffs? When is it going to happen?
I don't know. What if there's a Lions Cowboys?
McCarthy and crew. Yeah.
Well, we saw how that went in 2014.
Oh, don't even. Right. Let's go.
It's fine. Let's move on. That's a real kick. That was a real kick in the teeth, kind of like the double doink.
Yeah, I know.
You went there. When you said kick in the teeth, you could have just been talking about the OPI call that wasn't, a DPI call that wasn't.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. That was pretty bad.
See, anyway. Brendan's like a classic quiet storm troll because, you know, he's come on here, he's very nice, he's been lovely, but he's already managed to get in the no Super Bowls and the 2014 playoff just under the radar. I love it.
Well, the Super Bowl, that was an actual question. I mean, that was the only other Lions-related question. Yeah, so, you know, I was just saying, hey, the Lions were represented last night, and then, I had to do the Cowboys-Lions playoff game. That was hilarious.
The Lions represented brackets negatively.
Yeah.
Where is there any other way? Let's talk Bears, though, because we've gone through all the stats, and obviously we know what happened 2 weeks ago, but I kind of feel like Lions fans almost none the wiser from the game. You know, we got out of jail in the last 5 minutes of the game. You guys really deserve to win. And, you know, we have Dan Campbell and every one of his presses talking about the Bears as if they're a serious contender. You know, gritty team, really playing better than what their record suggests, fighting for every scrap. You have a look at teams that are imploding around the league, and there's plenty of them, including the Patriots that you just mentioned, but like the Titans have fallen off the cliff edge, the Panthers, all these teams. And yet the Bears, and I know there's problems with the coaching staff, but to their credit, it looks like this team has actually kind of gelled and come together a bit. What are your feelings coming into the back end of this season now? Because at 4-8, it feels like you are actually ascending. Am I dreaming?
No, I don't think you're dreaming, but I think any Bears fan will tell you defensively, the Bears have gotten significantly better. And over the last couple of weeks, they've looked really, really, really good. If the problems are still stemming somewhat on offense, and I'm sure Brendan will chime in this one as well. You know, if anyone had to just sit through that brutal, brutal Monday Night Football game against the Bears and the Vikings, right? It's offensively so inconsistent. So from 1 week, Luke Getsy will have Justin Fields slinging it all over the place, and they'll be looking fantastic. And then they'll barely put up 12 points and just have 847 screens, you know, everything being thrown at the line of scrimmage. It's really, really frustrating.
Inconsistency is the best word that I would use. So Ryan hit the nail on the head. Defensively, they've really gelled and they've found an identity, I would say. They've had continuity now for the last 3 or 4 weeks. Their defensive line has gotten so much better. They need to get to the quarterback a little bit more, but the addition of Montez Sweat, the emergence of Jervon Dexter, Justin Jones is playing better. It really allows the back end of the defense to do a lot more, and that's really what this defense is predicated on. You have to rush the passer with, you know, that 4-3, and then the back end does the work. And thankfully that guys like Jalen Johnson has had a much better, I guess, back half of the season. He's had a good season overall, but he's finally starting to get some of those takeaways. Tyreek Stevenson coming on strong, Terrell Smith. So the defense now for the last, I would say, 3 or 4 games has really turned it on, and you can count on them to give offenses a lot of fits. The offense is where obviously things are, there's issues. And I think Luke Getsy does a great job of actually scripting plays and scripting a game plan. But because the issue is he comes out firing with these 15 to 20 plays and they work really, really well. But then when the defense counterpunches, he doesn't have an answer for that. And he just sort of turtles. I've been using that word a lot. It just feels like he has a good plan in place. He knows what he needs to do, but he just doesn't. And whether it's him or the players or everybody, they just don't execute it well. And just the calls that are made later on in the second and third quarter and then the fourth quarter, it just doesn't gel. So if Getsy can sort of just harness what he's been doing with this script and be able to adjust based on what the defense is giving him, this offense could do pretty well, but that just hasn't happened consistently.
And I mean, no more so summed up than at the end of the Minnesota game last week, where the screen game somehow got the W for you guys. But the play of the game and what Justin Fields has been talking about all season in terms of, I feel like I work better off script, is the off script deep ball to Moore to put you in field goal range down 10-9 with the game on the line. And, you know, let him cook a little bit. And it seems that he actually can do some good things. It contributes maybe some more sacks in his game, which is something you guys have been trying to avoid. But it's a part of him that you can't deny. And it feels like he's been trying to have it denied from him by the offensive coordinator.
It's hard to judge if Justin Fields is a good quarterback or not. I know when people look at the numbers, they say, well, obviously the decision is made. I mean, the fumbles, I don't think anyone's going to argue he fumbles the ball far too often. And it's been a real negative of his game. But I think where we're so frustrated is when you continually call so many plays at the line of scrimmage, you're not really testing to see if this guy is reading defenses or if he's improving. Because there's been a couple games where it seems like, hey, the lights have come on. You know, he had a couple 300-yard passing games before he got hurt, looking really, really good, looking the part. But then you had the week before the bye, and it's a head scratcher. We don't know in Chicago. We've talked about this a lot in the podcast, is maybe at this point, because you don't know, then that means he's not the guy. But this Luke Getsy problem, again, his inconsistency makes it really hard for us to gather, is Justin Fields the answer long term, or should we be taking this probable first overall pick and drafting Caleb Williams or Drake May? I don't know the answer to that. And I think almost any Bears fan that says that they're absolutely certain, I don't think they're being genuine and honest about it.
A lot of fans look at what Justin Fields did with that DJ Moore ball, and it was a great pass. For some reason, the Vikings double covered Tyler Scott, which was the dumbest decision you can make considering what DJ Moore has meant to this team. And he was wide open. But you also have to go back and remember that Justin Fields dug himself into that hole and he had to dig himself out. Like they were in that position because of those two fumbles, one of which did lead to the go-ahead touchdown for the Vikings. So it's kind of one of those things like Justin Fields giveth, Justin Fields taketh away. You have those flash plays. And I can't remember who said it, but there was a quote, I think last week saying like, oh, I think it was Lewis Riddick, like flash plays are only good for so long because it just shows the inconsistency there. And something's not gelling, whether it's with Justin Fields, whether it's with the offensive system, both. I've said for weeks on end, and Ryan can back me up on this, Luke Getsy and Justin Fields do not work well together. It feels like you're just trying to, you know, merge that working relationship, and you get some good moments, but it just doesn't flow the way it should. And for example, last week when you had all those screen passes, you could see the defense start jumping up a little bit and anticipating it. That should have led to some of those big deep balls where Justin Fields excels, and it just didn't. So it just feels like to me, Justin Fields, I think he has great quarterback attributes. He's obviously a tremendous athlete. I think he can maybe flourish elsewhere with a different offensive coordinator, but just with Getsy, these two, the working relationship, it just feels there's a lot of friction there. Not like personally or anything. It's just, you know, the two styles don't blend well.
Steve, Ash, any questions that occur?
Just while we're on the topic of the offense, just on the run game, because you've had flashes, and Khalil Herbert has definitely, I think, been a plus for you this season. But like, you look at what David Montgomery is doing behind a good offensive line in Detroit now, like, you know, and he's been a fantastic pickup for us. Are you guys not frustrated that you're almost creating a problem for Fields by not being able to establish a run game other than him scrambling like mad, and you're putting that pressure on him?
I don't think so at all. I think actually the Bears have been very successful running the football with whoever's back there. I mean, maybe the numbers don't always back it up, but in terms of like when they've needed some good runs, they've got some good runs from Khalil Herbert, Deontay Foreman, Roschon Johnson. I think Roschon Johnson is a guy that I was kind of not as high on as other people were, and I'm eating my words because of that. I think Deontay Foreman came in and maybe was kind of an afterthought by some of the fans and some of maybe even the coaches, but has spelled and done really, really well. I mean this sincerely. You guys know this. I'm a huge David Montgomery fan. I've tweeted about it. I've told you guys. but honestly, I haven't really missed him much. I mean, I've been happy for him, for you guys. I mean that sincerely. I really like David Montgomery. I'm happy that he's doing well, but I haven't really missed him. Brendan, what about you, dude?
Look, I don't know if it's the blue jersey. I don't know if it's the number five. I don't know if it's just a combination of the line being amazing. David Montgomery looks so much faster as a Lion. Okay. I do not remember seeing the speed that he has with the Bears. He was kind of one of those, like, he danced around a little bit in the backfield. He's always been a bruising runner, and he's, you know, doesn't go down on first contact. But I'm telling you guys, I'm watching him this year early on, and I'm just like, David Montgomery looks faster. He's hit a new gear, it feels like, with the Lions. And so I just don't know if you were going to get that with the Bears, unfortunately. I do think what they have at running back, when everybody's healthy and you can kind of churn people in and out, it does work well. The issue that we've had is with Fields being out, you changed your offense a bit from when Tyson Bagent was in for those four games. And the running game was a lot more relied upon. So Deontay Foreman was doing a lot of the legwork. When Darrington Evans was with Chicago, he was doing a lot. And so the run game looked a lot better. When Fields came back, then you add in that element of the opportunities that he has and abilities to run the ball to the outside or up the middle and use the running game as well. So running backs aren't getting as much run with it, no pun intended. So it's a little bit of trying to find that balance of, hey, we want to lean on this running game with these running backs. Deontay Foreman was out last 2 weeks ago. So that was an issue where you then had to rely on Roschon Johnson more. Foreman and Herbert were starting to get going against you guys until Foreman got hurt. And then the running game kind of pittered out a little bit. So it's just, you have to see a little bit more with Fields and Foreman, Johnson, and Herbert all together, because the reality is they have not really been all together since the one, not even since like week one, like, because Deontay Foreman was inactive and they were still trying to find the rhythm when it came to the running game.
Just had a comment from Big Airy saying that's a turf issue when it comes to Montgomery. Not sure if there's anything to that, but running could indoors be versus running outdoors, maybe. I can kind of see it.
Yeah, very well could be. I was thinking about that too.
It's well documented that. So sorry.
No, sorry.
It's well documented that Soldier Field is not a fast place to play football.
Ash, any questions occurring from you?
Yeah, so at least speaking from kind of our outside perspective, the one thing that everyone seems to have against your sort of draft building strategy, I guess, on the offense is the fact you haven't, until this year, obviously drafting Darnell Wright, who was a darling of sort of draft Twitter over here at the number 18 pick. But obviously you guys took him in the top 10, which is a really good pick in my opinion. But you haven't really addressed the offensive line properly, kind of like, to obviously use our blueprint, the fact that we keep addressing it high with Ragnar, with Saul, with Decker. Is that really an issue for you guys? Because I know obviously you took Braxton Jones, I think it was late last year, and he's at least an average starting left tackle. You've got Darnell Wright to the right end, now bookending him. Is it really an issue for you guys in terms of how you're building the offensive line, or are we just not seeing things because we're not watching you guys week in, week out?
I can't wait to get in on this one. We argue about this one a lot. I mean, this is something that I've been pounding the table for a while, that Ryan Poles, the GM of the Chicago Bears, is a former offensive lineman that can't get the offensive line correct. And he's got Tevin Jenkins, who I think is probably our best offensive lineman right now, but he's been unhealthy for a couple of weeks. When he's out there, he's a mauler. He's fantastic. I absolutely love Darnell Wright, but the left side, the center, I mean, while they've played better, and I have to give credit where credit is due, I don't understand why he keeps spending in the secondary and spending in other places when he should be spending on the offensive line. I don't get it.
That's interesting. We have argued about this. I'll disagree when it comes to polls. Back with Ryan Pace, you could definitely make that argument. And really just all of the previous GMs, I've said that, or I realized that it has been 40 years since the Bears took an offensive lineman with a top 10 pick. And that offensive lineman just happens to be a Hall of Famer. You got to take guys early in the first round when you get a chance to. And finally, Ryan Poles' first round pick, he did address that. Now, you're not going to fix all of the holes in one offseason. I think they did a decent job developing Braxton Jones, and you can live with that on the left side. Tevin Jenkins, as Ryan said, is a phenomenal athlete. he's a Pro Bowl guy if he could just stay healthy, and he still may make the Pro Bowl even though he missed four games this year. Center is the obvious glaring issue. That's the one that hasn't necessarily been addressed as much, although they did sign Lucas Patrick to kind of be that guy last year, and that hasn't obviously worked out, especially with his injury history. Nate Davis was a pretty big signing, and he's been good when available. That's the other thing. He's also had other things going on personally earlier in this season. And then, of course, we talked about Wright. So you're seeing them actually start to build the offensive line. And now that Ryan Poles has had early first round picks and second round picks, he's building the trenches a bit more. But because of how it was built previously, it's a long process. You can't do it over in one offseason. But you're right. I mean, looking at what the Lions have done, Taylor Decker, Graham Glasgow, although he came back, and then Ragnow, Penei Sewell, like that's the way to do it. You build a consistent line, you develop them, and then you put somebody like Jared Goff out there who he's okay. He was okay with other teams, but now he's flourishing because he has so much protection and you're being able to build up the weapons around him later on. So it's a phenomenal way to build a team. You guys have done it well.
Many thanks to Jeff Hurley with the super sticker on YouTube for $10. Many thanks, Jeff. You are, as it says, number one fan by far in that regard. So thank you. I'm doing a lot of mock drafts right now, but Cedric Van Pran is basically like going much higher than I anticipate to you guys every single time. Don't know if you like that or not, but I have it penciled in. Coming to the defense, because we talked a lot about offense and then we'll talk specifically about the game, perhaps. You mentioned that the line has kind of come to play a bit, especially since Sweat came along, which has obviously been great. If you have a look at the back seven in terms of names, they're all names, at least to me, either they've been taken high or they've been big free agent signings, or in the case of Jack Sanborn, maybe one of the best undrafted guys of the last few years. But they haven't been doing the business, and then suddenly maybe just a little bit more complimentary football and all of these guys are flourishing. I mean, Kyler Gordon, I know, had been struggling since he got drafted, really. But even he's starting to look competent now as maybe the weaker guy in that DB room. And Eddie Jackson's had an up and down time, but he looks like he's coming back. Maybe, no? Okay, Ryan doesn't like that take. But TJ Edwards and Tremaine Edmonds look like they've been reasonable. I don't know about value for money, but they are producing on the field. So you guys, the defense, it does seem to be trending in the right direction. Is there going to be more investment, you think, in the offseason on the defensive line to kind of make the most of that back seven? Because it just feels like they've been failed by the line right now.
I mean, I think that really all comes down to who's going to be the head coach. And if they win out these last five games, then Matt Eberflus sticks around and then he gets to kind of pick. But I don't foresee that happening. We've argued endlessly, viciously, violently on our podcast about Matt Eberflus. I think he's a really good defensive coordinator. In fact, I think he's a better defensive coordinator than I gave him credit for. I still don't think that he's a good head coach. And so, you know, it depends on if he's back. I would hope that the emphasis would be a little bit on getting some offensive weapons and then defensive line. You definitely need another pass rusher because Yannick Ngakoue has just been he's been trash. And Montez Sweat is really good, but you know, he's not just a pure pass rusher. So I think, yeah, investment should need to happen there. And then Eddie Jackson has been terrible. And he needs to be replaced. He was really, really, really good in 2018. And unfortunately he's never been able to replicate that magic.
So I think there are still going to be moves being made. Ryan mentioned Ngakoue, which is very surprising. He's somebody who averaged 8 sacks every single season before coming to Chicago, and he just really hasn't lived up to and he's been a little bit better. But as being that, like, the guy on the defensive line, it's been a bust. So I think they will look to get another edge potentially earlier in the draft. I think they could still get a 3 technique, even though Jervon Dexter is emerging. Justin Jones, maybe he resigns on a cheap deal. Linebackers are set. You talked about it. I think cornerbacks are set. They've got depth too. You talked about Kyler Gordon. Terrell Smith, watch him if he's getting run. He's a 5th round pick out of Minnesota. He's been really, really good when he's had chances. Of course, you saw Tyreek Stevenson and then Jalen Johnson. I assume that he's going to stay. So then you're looking at somebody to replace Eddie Jackson because he is not coming back next year. He's got a high cap hit, a lot of money that you can get out under. He was great back in the day, but as Ryan said, he's a shell of himself. So regardless, whoever's going to be the defensive coordinator or the head coach next year, you still have a few pieces that you're going to get. But the defense is so much closer than it was even, I mean, even at the early part of the season. They've really gelled, and the young guys that you mentioned, Kyler Gordon's playing so much better. Jaquan Brisker's starting to get his legs underneath him. Tyreek Stevenson has had an up and down season, but you expect that from rookie and young cornerbacks. So the future's bright on the defensive side of the ball, which is, of course, that's what we're known for. Has to happen for Bears football.
So turning towards the game in particular, and just the last two games that you've had, you should have been Detroit. I'm going to stay on that bandwagon because, like, you guys lost it more than we won it, just with what I consider to be really bad play calling in the last 5 minutes. It was egregious. But Ash knows my feelings on soft zone prevent defense. It was awful. So you should have won that game. And then you did beat Minnesota. So two division games in a row, should have won both. Feels like you're trending up. Defensively, do you feel like you should have the measure of this Lions team?
Yeah, I mean, I think my question is, you guys would be, did we break Jared Goff? Like, what happened? Because dude was protecting the football so well. I mean, like, truly having a phenomenal year, and then all of a sudden, just like the Bears are getting turnovers left and right from both the Minnesota game and facing you guys the first time around, which is something that was not happening, as Brendan said, in the early parts of the season. So I do think that Matt Eberflus will come out with a really strong game plan. Again, I think Luke Getsy and Matt Eberflus in the beginning of the game have a really good game plan. It's in the second half, they've been abysmal at making adjustments, and it hasn't worked really well for them. So that's kind of where I'm going to be really curious to see what happens. I think they come out early, and I think defensively, at least, they give you guys some fits. Maybe you score early, but then watch it as a quick adjustment happens, and then you maybe struggle a little bit later. But yeah, it's kind of where I'm at.
You guys have a very, very dangerous enemy on Sunday, and that is Jared Goff playing December football in the elements. I mean, he has not been great in his career, and I know it's not going to snow. Probably going to be a little windy. It's probably going to be like 30 degrees or so at Soldier Field. But I looked up the stats for an article I did, and I don't care what Jared Goff says. He says the cold weather doesn't affect him. Stats might say differently. In nine career regular season games in December, playing outdoors in a cold climate, Goff has completed 56% of his passes for 1,996 yards, nine touchdowns, and nine interceptions with a rating of 72.6. So that is very, like, below average. And seeing what the Bears defense has made him do the last time they played, of course, his game against the Packers. He was better against the Saints, definitely. But I'd be concerned. And I think that depending on what happens at center, if Glasgow can't go, the interior of the offensive line could be a little bit susceptible. So we'll see what happens there. But and then, of course, I think the Bears play tight ends very, very well. Sam Laporta didn't do much against the Bears the last time that these two teams met. So you're really going to have to rely on guys like Amon-Ra, Jameson Williams on the outside. And with the secondary playing better, how much is that going to work? So I'm not, like, I know I'm drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit, but I do think the Bears defense matches up well with this offense. They just got to quit with the prevent if they have a lead. Because the only thing prevent does is it prevents you from winning, not the other team.
And that's something the Lions haven't shied away from when it comes to actually trying to kill games. Steve, Ash, what do you make of that matchup specifically? Because that was the Achilles heel until the last 5 minutes last time. And Goff had a rebound game and a sort of conservative effort last week where he didn't turn the ball over, but he wasn't exactly putting the ball in harm's way either, which we kind of predicted going into it that he was going to go into a shell, and he did a bit. And the guys, I think, are onto something. You know, the DBs for the Bears are playing better. The line is playing better. We didn't get much going in the run or the pass. So, what are we going to do?
Well, I mean, I think Brendan summed it up really well with Goff. So Goff is kind of like
sort of late 90s electronics in that, you know, they kind of work really well, and then they get some like water or something like damp in them, and they kind of like short circuit, and then like anything can happen. And that's been Goff all season. Like, you know, we've seen him 85, 90% of the time looking a really good pocket passer, confident, you know, reading the defense, making the throws. You know, he's got a great arm, but then there'll just be the odd moment where he just, it's like his circuits are frazzled, and all of a sudden there's just picks been thrown and he looks absolutely shook. And my worry is, I'm sure you guys are going to tell me the weather is going to be like filthy in Chicago this weekend.
Not as bad as feared, I think, but yeah.
No, yeah, it's not going to be terrible.
But, you know, like, if, like I said, if Goff has sometimes one of those games, and I just worry that outside at Soldier Field, it could be one of those games.
Ash, is Jared Goff a Sony Walkman in the rain?
That's not a reference I understand. I'm too young for that, unfortunately.
Oh, go away.
I'm only out myself here a bit.
Is he better than a Sega Mega Drive?
Okay, now we're getting somewhere. Now I understand. For me, what happened against you guys a couple of weeks ago, aside from you guys purposely sticking linebackers right into Sam Laporta's roots, so Goff throwing a timing boot and throwing interceptions on them, cough, it's more to do with the interior, as you said. Ragnar's going to be going, so it's going to be Glasgow at centre, and it's probably going to be Colby Swordstull at right guard. And when he played you guys a couple of weeks ago, he was at left guard, which is a completely new position for him. He's someone we drafted, God, correct me, I think it was sixth round from William & Mary as a right tackle. He's someone we're moving inside to right guard now, and then having to move him around. Now he's back to sort of his more familiar side. He did play better last week playing there. Something hopefully we can carry on going forward. But it really was that interior pressure those couple of weeks where, was it round five? There we go. I knew I was going to get correct tonight.
Pretty close.
Colby Swordstull is the kind of guy that if Brendan could answer a question on a trivia, I'd be really impressed. He's that kind of under the radar guy.
I did do some research on him because I knew Ragnow. Thank you. I said Glasgow earlier. I knew Ragnow was going to be out. I was like, who's going to be starting? And that name popped up and I started doing research on him.
Yeah, it's either going to be him. It's going to be Kuriti Arashika, who used to play for the Eagles, usually plays left guard. And then we did sign Matt Ferranocco, as me and Matt were discussing earlier, who was in the conversation for the Cowboys left guard job in this camp. It's not good. We have this really good O-line where we had, obviously, Decker, Jonah Jackson, Ragnow, Hal Vitae, Saul, and then Glasgow was this ultimate interior offensive line backup. And they've basically played one game together. It's the curse of this team where we have this really good offensive line, but you can only get three or four out of the five at a time. Someone's always got to be injured. Like, obviously, I know Frank's carrying his toe injury that he's going to carry for the rest of his career. Vitae's got the back injury, which has basically ended his career now. It's going to be really bad, the interior pressure, though, which is what scares me, because coming into this draft cycle, Matt can back me up because I did not stop talking about them. I love Gavon Dexter, which is big for me because I'm a Florida State fan, so for me to like a Gator is big. Ooh. And then I actually really like Zach Pickens as well. Like, I did a profile from first. I was like, that guy could be a really good, like, lighter D-tackle, but someone you could really use because he's got that quick first step. It's going to be out of interior pressure for me, and that's what scares me with Ragnow out, because we've seen this past couple of weeks what happens when Goff gets pressure in his face, and I don't want that again.
Okay, let's flip.
Your hashtag makes so much. Sorry, I was going to say your hashtag makes so much more sense now that you said you're a Florida State fan.
Oh, the pain that Ash has gone through the last week or so. It's not been pretty. Let's flip over to the other side of the ball because I know that we're a little short on time. So Bears offense against the Lions defense. Lions defense has been... Yeah. And the Bears offense has been... Yes, so this is going to be if it's Lions offense versus Bears defense's strength on strength, this is definitely not that. So, Ryan, Brendan, what do you make of the matchup on that side of the ball? Because for me, it's anyone's game.
Can Justin Fields limit the turnovers? Can his explosive run plays continue to hurt you guys? Which, you know, Steve and I were talking about it. It was really surprising because Luke Getsy has been reluctant to call design quarterback runs for much of this season, unlike last season. But he did it last time we faced off, and it worked really, really, really well. Justin Fields is an excellent athlete. Incredibly, I mean, you guys are very well aware of that. I don't know. That's a really good question. I have no idea.
I have a question for you guys. How much are you dreading the loss of Aleem McNeil for the next 4 weeks?
Oh, 110%. That's I was saying about interior pressure of coming in. That's all of ours gone. We've basically got Hutchinson and that's it. So double team him and you're probably going to keep Fields clean, which is scary for us.
That's what I figured. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
That's what, sorry.
And I was just going to say, I figured like that's the weak link of the Lions defense. Now, McNeil played really well against the Bears the last time they played. He was one of the guys who got the sack before Aiden Hutchinson at the end of the game. So if I'm Luke Getsy, I'm calling Deontay Foreman straight up the gut, run behind Tevin Jenkins and Nate Davis and continue to attack that middle of the defense, because it's going to be very interesting because the Bears are also without Equanimee St. Brown. We don't get a St. Brown brother, unfortunately, for this game. But that also means the Bears lose one of their best blocking wide receivers. So a lot of those screens that we saw over the last few games, I don't know if they're going to happen the same way, because St. Brown was instrumental in pushing guys out of the way for DJ Moore, Darnell Mooney, Cole Kmet, whatever. So I think the keys to the game are going to be attacking that middle of the defense, relying on the run game, even doing some of those quarterback runs, but more so up the middle instead of the outside, because surely the Lions know Justin Fields has gashed them so many games before. You know it's coming. So if I'm the defensive coordinator, Aaron Glenn, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Aaron. If I'm Aaron Glenn, I'm making sure that the outsides are protected, because that's where Justin Fields is the most dangerous to get those yards. And really, if I'm Getsy, I'm calling things up the middle and attacking that middle of the defense and hopefully opening things up a little bit more. But that's the matchup I'm really interested to see, is how the Bears middle of the offensive line does with the Lions defensive line.
Steve.
Guys, thank you so much for having me on, but I've got to run. So
that's cool.
Look forward to talking trash when the game starts on Sunday. Take care, everybody.
Good luck.
Cheers, Ryan.
Just had a reminder from Joshua Mercer in the chat that one of our game plans might be that we have someone who's almost the rated R superstar reincarnated on our defensive line, who's going to spear people until their quarterbacks are knocked out the
yes.
game. But apart from that as a game plan, Steve, we have the fifth best run defense in the NFL in total yards. But with no Aleem McNeil, Brendan's right. That's going to be the potential issue, right?
I mean, if we're throwing in like WWE references, my worry is that, you know, Lions offense against Bears defense, sorry, Lions defense against Bears offense is going to be like 90s Attitude Era, but you're hoping for like Stone Cold and The Undertaker, but you actually get like two divas having a pillow fight, which kind of happened in like the Vikings-Bears game. Do you know, I'm quite okay with McNeil not being there. It's definitely a blow. I'm more worried about DJ Moore in our backfield being, you know, one-on-one with Jerry Jacobs. That's my big worry.
Yeah, I'm with you on that as well. It feels like Aaron Glenn over-prioritises the run, and with Aleem McNeil not there, I kind of feel like the only game plan is to double down on that, which puts even more pressure on our DBs who have been struggling. But the thing is, if I'm coming into this game, I am not going to eviscerate Aaron Glenn by losing the ball, by losing the game because they were able to pass the ball. But if Fields wins the game running it, I'm going to obliterate him because, as Brendan has said, you know it's coming and you should really prepare for the things you know are coming. But we all know that the Lions can't handle rushing quarterbacks. And that's been the thing I've tried to fight against for the longest time. But it is just one of those things that is going to be forever, evermore under this current regime, a problem for us. Brendan, I know you're short of time, so I'm just going to give you the floor at this point.
I was just going to say that you guys might have a... you guys might be okay when it comes to passing, because the Bears could be without, I mentioned Equanimee St. Brown, Also could be without Tyler Scott, also could be without Bayless Jones. So really, there's only a few healthy wide receivers right now for the Bears. Of course, they're the top two, DJ Moore and Darnell Mooney, but you limit what you can do. So DJ Moore is definitely going to be a focal point. You know that's coming, but there's a lot less options for the Bears to work with. So that does benefit the pass defense. So at the very least, you know that's coming. But you're right. Even, Jerry J Jacobs, Cameron Sutton, DJ Moore is dangerous against pretty much any DB. So that's definitely going to be the matchup to watch too.
Definitely. And to come straight back to you, Brendan, because I know that we're short. How do you actually see the game going? What's the score prediction you might want to throw out there, or any other prediction about the game?
Yeah, so I'm going to be working on my bold predictions for Bears Wire. You can check them out tomorrow. But in terms of the, I'd say, score for the game. Sorry, had a brain fart. I do have the Bears winning 27-23, and I'm scared to make this prediction because we all fall into this trap. The Bears do not know how to sustain success. They get a little bit, and then just like last week, or I'm sorry, 3 weeks ago against the Lions, they blew the game because they didn't know how to win. They didn't know how to sustain that success, and it just feels like they're allergic to it. But the fact that the defense has finally gotten their identity under place, it just feels like something's finally turning now. And I'm very scared to believe in this team, unfortunately. But I think that knowing the Lions are also going through a bit of a rough patch, they're dealing with the injuries we talked about. They're playing outside in December. They usually don't do well there. I just think now this is finally the time where the Bears get their second win in a row for the first time under Matt Eberflus. It's so sad that that hasn't happened. But it just feels like everything's kind of falling into place for this team to get that big win and for Justin Fields to have another strong game because, let's face it, he can always has strong games against the Lions. So I'm predicting a win, but I'm clutching my pearls while doing it because I'm very scared of this team.
I don't blame you. There's a lot of Lions fans out there, and I don't know whether they're trying to reverse jinx it, but are predicting a loss in this game. And I'm kind of surprised, given that we're 9-3 and second in the NFL,
Yeah.
that Lions fans just can't handle a modicum of success. You said about the bold predictions article coming. Have you got any other articles the Lions fans might be interested in pre-game?
Yeah, so I just released the five players to watch. Tried to go a little bit off the beaten path here. One of them I included was Riley Patterson because he has not yet kicked a field goal at Soldier Field. And Soldier Field, we talk about the turf, talk about the climate. That place is windy. So maybe if this game comes down to a field goal at the end, that could be something worth watching. But yeah, I highlighted a few other guys under the radar. Of course, Goff, though. That's where I pulled my stats earlier. But yeah, we'll have articles on Bears Wire every day with all of our writers. And then Ryan, myself, Patrick Sheldon, and Jack Wright will be back on Sunday evening to recap, hopefully, a win. But we just don't know what it comes with this team. I will say, I love watching you guys tweet. I don't know who's running the Twitter account. But just how excited you get. Like I was following along with the Saints game. That was a fun roller coaster. So guys are doing because it's been fun to follow along.
Anthony Fitzpatrick is the man, and he is a funny, funny guy. So yeah, I absolutely love that. Brendan, I know that you need to go, but thank you for lending us your time. Really appreciate it. Fun to, for the second or third time, I think you've been with us now to have you again. And I don't know if Ryan's mentioned it, but we are coming to Chicago the Sunday before the draft. And I know that Bears Wire are going to be really busy with content, but if you have a free evening for a beer, I'd love to come and meet you in person.
Absolutely. That's awesome. All you guys are coming in?
I think quite a few of us. It depends on a few things, but me and Ash have certainly bought our tickets all ready to go. So we're definitely coming.
That's awesome. We'll definitely have to we'll figure something out. At the very least, I'd love to come on before that, give you some recommendations. But so that's awesome you guys are coming here. You're gonna love it.
Can't wait. But anyway, great to see you again. Good luck for the game, and we'll speak soon.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Cheers,
Bye.
Brendan.
See ya.
All right, boys. Final thoughts from us, I think. It feels like so much of a closer game than the records would suggest, just because, I mean, it was a bounce back game for the Lions last week. I mean, I think the decline has been arrested, but this is still a Bears team that is on the up, albeit maybe from a low base, but at home you know, when you feel like a bit of confidence is coming into you, it does a lot for a team. And, you know, you've got a head coach fighting for his job, which we've heard. No one really wants him there. But if he keeps winning, it's going to be hard to say no, at least for one more year. So they've got all the reason in the world to want to win this game. They feel like the Lions from 2 years ago to me. They really, really do.
I was about to say that. I was about to make that comparison. This feels like a tiny bit. I know they've obviously made some wins already. And I know it was the anniversary. I think it was last week. Something like that. This feels like that Vikings game that we all remember for them. Like, I know I think Fields actually might hurt us up more around this outside than he will up the middle. Because at this point, you look at our DTs, as we discussed earlier, they're all big run stuffers. We don't really have, outside of Levi and bringing in Pascal, we don't really have someone who can pass rush. It's all going to be big guys. So I think Fields is going to get into the outside, and with Anzalone being hurt, I don't know. It does feel a bit like, I hate saying it's a trap game, because number one, I don't want us to have me and Matt to have a really bad experience on Sunday, like, because it's going to be horrible to make clips of. But it does feel like this could be another, a real awakening for this defense, and it needs another slap around the face to get itself into gear. Because as we keep saying, we're getting closer and closer to the big boy time where we need to nut up and shut up. And I don't know if the defense can right now.
I mean, I think Ash has absolutely summed it up there. This is it. You know, it's another game where it's kind of put a push up for Aaron Glenn. If he can't handle Fields, if his defense can't handle Fields after already having a shot at Fields 3 weeks ago, and this being another game where a mobile quarterback tortures us, like, that's a big, big problem for us playoff-wise. So I think this game is so, so important. Like, to go away outside Soldier Field, divisional game, mobile quarterback. As you said, like, we were 2 years ago, massively inconsistent, but dangerous, like, any given Sunday. Like, this is a massive game for us. Huge. You know, and we want to be able to say that we've swept the Bears. Like, that's huge for us. So I think it's... Yeah, I'm going to be absolutely sweating bullets on Sunday.
It's just one of those where I'm just so nervous about this game. And the reason I'm nervous is because, contrary to some of the others in recent weeks, I feel like this is one that we can genuinely lose. Whereas in previous weeks, I really feel like we shouldn't be losing. Whereas this one, I feel like is absolutely possible. And that scares me, because you look at the records, you look at the team we want to be, this should be an easy win, but it's not going to be. But I'm going to come out with a bold prediction before we talk about score predictions. It's not been an up year for Hutch in terms of statistical production. Pressures have been there. PFF grade has been there. Sacks have not been there. And I know a lot of people do and don't care about that metric. But say what you will about how reliable they are as an indicator that a player is playing well. Sacks end a play. They just do, and that's why people care about them. They are the...
They end drives.
They end drives, they put people behind the sticks, at the very least, they disrupt momentum, and they are lucky. They are lucky. They are not an indicator if someone is playing well. Pressures are. But you need them. This is the game for Hutch. And it doesn't make any logical sense. Why? Because he's been triple-teamed sometimes in recent games, and it's taken him out of it. And now they have one less person to worry about, and Aline McNeil. But it's just one of those weird things that you can't explain why it's happened. It's just going to happen. Someone mentioned him shaving his head. He's got the buzz cut now. He looks sharp as hell. You can tell that he's like, it's business time. And there's no rhyme or reason to sacks, which is why I feel confident about this, because he is having a really bloody good year, and it's got to translate at some point. Why not now? Three sacks for Hutchinson on Sunday is my bold take. What about you guys? Any bold predictions before we come into the score prediction?
We hold Justin Fields to less than 50 yards on the ground.
Ooh, big chat. Big chat from Ash.
I know it's going to come, and I will be clipping. Don't worry, if I will be clipping that up, and if I'm wrong, I know I did it earlier this week with Rye. Well, last week with Rye with his prediction for the ACC Championship game. I will happily slap it on TikTok, Instagram Reels, and YouTube Shorts of me saying that, and then just put the face palm.
Ash, I've been worrying about you all week. I genuinely have been worrying about you all week, Ash, because you spent all week on social media celebrating Aston Villa winning the third place in December trophy. And you know, I just think it's gone to your head. I think you've got giddy, because if we get Fields to under 50 yards, it'd be amazing, but I can't see it happening.
I mean, I'd rather win the third place trophy in December than I would the first place in October that Spurs fans were, but never mind Spurs fans.
You know, player, goal and manager of the month, but you know, still being like 10th.
7th.
Ah, that's a new 10th. That's not in the Champions League spots, unlike some.
Oh, this is fun.
It was a good win, Ash. That was a good win. Respect.
Yeah, we could beat them. We looked awful. You looked much better than we did against them. But anyway, moving on to the score prediction for this game, though. Lions at the Bears. Are you going to be actually bold enough to pick the other way? Because I'm seriously considering it. I'll go last just so I have some time to think about it, because I'm flip-flopping on this. Ash, I'll come to you first because Steve looks like he's in turmoil as well.
21-17 to the Lions.
Lisa Di Lorenzo in the chat had that 2 seconds ago, and then you've gone with her as well. I love it.
You can't claim plagiarism. I've had it written on my draft for the game preview article. I'm defending myself against any claims. Unlike ASBM people who suddenly say, fuck ASBM. Anyway, so I can see us scoring touchdowns for sure and them getting a field goal. Completely agree. Dan in this situation, this game, with it being windy, not really knowing quite. Riley, can trust Riley there. He probably will revert to a bit more, avoid the field goals, but we'll score touchdowns. They'll get a field goal to make it like 17-14, about 5 minutes left in the game, and we do it again. We go into this, the hurry-up offense. Goff seems to enter the zone where, for some reason, when we're in the hurry-up, where he can call his own plays, it goes right for him. We're going to do that. We'll score again, and then one of Hutch's sacks or a Hutch interception, a big play from the defense, ends the game, and that's it. We can kneel it down, victory formation.
Many thanks to Joshua Mercer 7 on Twitch for gifting 2 tier 1 subs to the community. That's 17 now in the channel that Josh has done so far. Thank you, Josh. Gifted subs to Fon Roqua and Chromon. Hope you're all doing well and enjoy your subs. Steve, it's your time, sir.
So how I think this is going to play out, I do not think this is going to be one of Goff's better games. And I think we're going to have to really lean on the run. I think Montgomery is going to want to score some points and get some yards. My worry is that Gibbs and Montgomery get shut down by like Edwards and Edmonds. And that they can't get the run game going. I think this is going to be low scoring. I really, really would like and I hate picking against the Lions. I hate it, especially against the Bears. But I've just got a feeling that this is going to be one of those games where everything goes wrong and they're all looking at each other. So I'm going to go 21-19 Bears. And I feel disgusted at myself.
No, but I'm with you in kind of the rationale behind it. It just feels like that could happen. I am going to be more...
Tell you what, Matt, it feels like we've been dodging bullets. For like week after week after week, we've been dodging bullets. And I think one is going to catch us squarely between the eyes.
Not even squarely between the eyes. I kind of see the Matrix scene with Neo when he's first dodging the bullets and then one catches him through the knee. Like, that scene specifically speaks to me a lot here. I'm going to be down on both offenses. I think that they are going to cancel each other out a little bit. I worry about our pass game against an ascending Bears defense. I think we will, as Steve says, lean on the run, and I don't think it'll massively work, and I do not think we will change tack. But unfortunately for the Bears, I think they'll do exactly what they did against the Vikings. Quick screen stuff, run game stuff that doesn't seem to go anywhere. I think that we'll get pressure on Fields. As I said, I think we'll sack him three times at least. I think that will kill drives, and I think they'll kill our drives with a good ascending defensive line. I am going to predict a scoreline not dissimilar to what Chicago had last week. I'm going to go 13-10 Detroit in a horrible slugfest of a black and blue division worthy game in December, cold weather, not snow, but just two offenses struggle to hell. I don't think Goff is going to turn the ball over. I just don't think he's going to have a great game.
Oh, don't make me live through another one of those games at like 7 days after that.
I mean, I'd bite your hand off for a 13-10 win. For a 7-6 win, you know, something that the Patriots like coughing up a furball on a Thursday night. You know, I'd bite your hand off if we could just get through and win by, you know, the odd point. But I don't know. I just think we deserve to get caught out because we have been winging it a bit.
It has felt like after winning games deservedly that we have kind of walked on eggshells, but we then have lost a game or two as well. So it's not like we haven't. But yeah, I read it. I hear it.
Just while we're on this note of reflection, can I ask a question? And this is a question that could end the pod here. Are the Green Bay Packers the team to beat in the NFC North at the moment?
Yes.
Do you mean are they the best? The team playing
are
the best
playing
football
the best
right
football?
Now?
Yeah.
Yes. I hate it. I hate it because I've talked some shit about Jordan Love, but Jordan Love is looking at least half decent right now in that defense. Joe Barry, we saw it against us. He's kind of worked out how to be at least a competent defensive coordinator here right now in terms of the form rankings. They are better than us. We're still probably better than the Vikings, at least. And this is going to be the real sort of toss-up between us and the Bears to see who comes on top there. But right now, the Packers look the best in terms of like the form rankings, yeah.
No. We're better. But it's more marginal than it was. You know, the Packers were a team we were consigning to draft hopes and picking a quarterback in the top 10. Low top 10, but top 10. And suddenly, they're likely going to the playoffs. But we said the same about Josh Dobbs 2 weeks ago and the Vikings. And I say we, as in the collective we, as opposed to the individual we, because I really never thought that. But it seemed like a lot of people were buying into the Vikes. It's a temporary thing, I think, where they're showing they've had some positive regression and maybe slightly more than positive regression to the mean from where they were. They were underperforming, now they're overperforming. But I still think in a neutral site game, I would take the Lions. Better quarterback, better run game, better offensive line. Defense is questionable. Better weapons, though. I still feel like we should really win that game. But they've gone from, I think we win 75% of the time or 80% of the time in that game a month ago to like 60-40, 55-45. It's much closer. What about you?
I mean, even if we lose to the Bears on Sunday, I still think we're a better team than the Bears by miles. I think like any given Sunday, you know, particularly at Soldier Field outside, I think the Bears could put one on us. But we're a much better team than the Bears. And same with the Vikings. You know, when Jefferson comes back, and if Jefferson gets back into the groove, I think he's due back maybe in 2 weeks.
He's off the injury report today for the Vikings. He should be playing on Sunday.
Yeah, I think it might be I think they might keep him for the week after, but we'll see. We'll see. But yeah, I still think we're better than the Vikings. But the Packers, I mean, Thanksgiving was bad, and then the Packers played better last week than they did against us on Thanksgiving. You know, they beat the Chiefs. So I think that I would be really worried. And if you look at the way the playoffs are panning out, it looks like we're going to be number three seed. And that means we're probably going to play the sixth place team. And that at the moment is a tie between the Vikings and the Packers. And I think the Vikings will regress and may not even get to seven. Packers aren't going to get to five because the Cowboys are probably going to be fifth. So it's a high chance we're going to play the Packers in the playoffs. A high chance, I'm telling you.
It's going to be really interesting to see what happens for a division victory, because this game, if it gets close, is massive, because we've split the series with the Packers, which means there's no winner in the head-to-head, which means it defaults to in-division records. We are 2-1, they are 2-2. If we lose to the Bears, we go to 2-2 and it's level, and then we play the Vikings twice. The Packers in division, they play the Vikings away and then the Bears at home. And frankly, the way they're playing, they might win both of those games. And so to even get there, we need to beat the Vikings twice, which I think we should do, but that would tie the in-division record. So
I've got no doubt we're going to win the division. Like, I don't fear the Packers winning the division because I think we're enough ahead of them. But the Packers have got an absolutely piss-easy schedule. They've got to play...
They should win all five games.
Yeah, the Giants, Giants, Panthers... So they should easily win four out of those five. So the Packers could well finish on 10-6. And if they finish on 10-6, they're going to be the number six seed, which means they're going to be playing the number three seed. And so my worry isn't us not winning the division. My worry is playing a juiced up Packers team, you know, in January.
It could well happen, and we'll find out all about that in the coming weeks. But Lions Bears this Sunday. Hopefully you will join us for that. Me and Ash on the call as always on Sunday. Review show is on Monday. College Football Podcast was yesterday and it was a doozy. It is up on YouTube and your podcast feeds right now, so go and check it out. Otherwise, you can follow us on our socials on Royal Lions UK on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And the Facebook group for Worldwide Fans is Detroit Lions Fans UK One Pride Worldwide. The website, you'll find Ash's preview article going up there on rotluk.com tomorrow. So go and check it out. Please don't forget to subscribe and rate us 5 stars on your podcast provider. We're going to be on for some questions after I say goodbye to our podcast feed now. But Steve, Ash, a pleasure as always. Guys, thank you for listening. A win by any means. Let's go, Lions One Pride.
One Pride.
It's only the Bears.